Thank you.
Okay, human services.
Well, before we start, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the AAA bond.
You would be remiss.
And you're going to hear a AAA presentation now. So.
Wow.
Oh, Cammy's giving it?
What a good lead-in.
All right, so before we start on the budget, we usually do a third quarter projection so you can see where we are projecting for this year, before you see where we are, what we need for 2022. So the first page, as you'll see, we are projecting a $2.2 million surplus for 2021. Of this, there's $3 million in the Division of Aging, largely due to their behavioral health services and placements. And then DCFS, we are projecting a deficit of $1.3 million, which we'll see the details later on when we get to their section. And then all the other ones are somewhat little, so that equals a $2.2 million. And then Brookside Care Center, through August, they had a loss of $2.1 million, largely attributed to the census. We budgeted at $145, and year-to-date we're at $110.5. And then Willowbrook, we do have a profit through August of $90,000.
If you're more comfortable speaking without the mask, it's a little more clear when you have to do all that talking. So, go ahead.
Okay, so the next page is where we start with our 2022 budget. We are looking for a levy increase of $1.8 million. That is a 10.6% increase. Part of that is the Brookside, the levy give back. Without that portion, it's an 8.8% increase, or $1.5 million. You're going to see the majority of this is in our DCFS placements when we get to Division of Children and Family Services. For our county FTEs, we are looking for an increase of 7.1%. And then down below, we talk about where we are getting funded. So our budget is $106 million. And from that, the majority of our funding is coming from the federal at 39.56, and then the state at 28.75. Our levy is at 18.32. Our other fees for services, mostly in there, is 10.82, and grants at 2%. The next page I put in there, this is something additional I don't usually do, but it's county-wide stuff that hit our divisions that the directors really didn't have any say over. So I thought we'd explain it in the beginning so I don't have to explain it at each division. So the first one is the 1% wage scale adjustment, which I know you guys heard about last night. For our divisions, that equated to $34,000, almost $35,000. The HR allocation increase for diversity and equity inclusion coordinator, that was $18,000.
But that's not in there now.
And I don't know, I'd have to check with my fiscal managers on how much revenue we would have been drawing down on that as well, so that's not one for one, just so you're aware, if there's any revenue that we would be able to draw down for that. Health insurance increase, $154,000. Normal salaries changes, $161,000. Other benefits, $33,000. We do have a 2% contractor increase, $431,000, and the offsetting revenue is $375,000. Public liability insurance increase of $71,000. And then we have the ARPA countywide funds of $745,000. We have $495,000 of that is in the health division, and $250,000 of that is in the Brookside Care Center. And then we have division-specific ARPA funding, $120,000 for the Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services. And then we have a building rental for the job center, a decrease of $108,000. So these, again, are just all costs that the division directors, we just kind of tell them this is changing. So. Wanted to explain that up front. And then we can go into our first, unless anyone has any questions, we're going to our first division.
Any questions at this point from the committee? Or the supervisors? Seeing none, go ahead.
All right, so for the office of the director, in the budget books, that's on page, starts on page 165. We are looking for a levy increase of $2,775, which is a half of a percentage. Again, we do have that $18,000 in here for that HR position, and I'm not sure, I'm pretty sure there's probably some revenue associated with it, but I'm not exactly sure on that. It might be one for one in the levy, but that would come off if that was how that was voted, so. That's it for Office of the Director.
Questions or comments on the directors? You don't get to shake your head no, John.
It's a subliminal.
Yeah, you don't try to pass that off into my mind with you shaking your head no. All right, seeing none, can I have a motion on that section?
Motion to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Wambolt, seconded by Supervisor Salaberry. Any further questions before we move on? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, it passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, the next division is our central services. It starts on page 171 in the budget book. This division is divided into two sections. One is the countywide mail services that we manage, and then the job center. In here, we have a total levy increase of 1.4% or $3,395. This is an increase in our purchase services. It's just somebody that we just pay their insurance, so it went from single to family. It's probably Goodwill, and we pay them actual costs. They don't make a profit, it's actual cost. So that was the increase. Any questions on central services?
Any committee members have any questions on central services? Supervisors in the audience, any questions on central services?
I just have a general
Supervisor
question.
Supervisor Uhas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Were there any modifications to your budget at committee level?
So this all was approved by all the committees.
As is,
correct. No modifications.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about just this section or the entire?
The entire budget.
The entire budget.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
Just because Monday night, I mean, I wasn't aware of a few, and it came, so I just wanted to make sure that
HR portion in here.
Okay.
From last night, but yeah, everything was approved the way it was presented.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Okay, can I have a motion on the central services portion?
So moved.
It's been moved by Supervisor Uhas, seconded by Supervisor Wamble, because he looked at me. Any questions? I can read mine.
What do you call it now?
any further questions after the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, so our first actual division in here is the Division of Workforce Development. It starts on page 175 in the budget book. I just want to say congratulations on the AAA rating before I we would like to add a 1.0 FTE. This actually isn't an add, it's actually a reclass. So this is a position that was contracted through Goodwill, I believe,
yes.
And it's actually going to be a $20,000 savings. So we're just bringing somebody that was contracted into a county position. AAA rating, no. We want to keep that up.
She's good.
Yeah, check that box.
The other thing I want to mention in this division, on page 12 in the revenue, or actually in the grants and contributions section, you'll see a decrease for Wisconsin Home Energy Assistance Program, the WEAP funding. So that program is being taken over by the state. So you see a decrease in the expenses, and you'll also see a decrease in the revenue for that. So
right.
It's one for one. Overall, for the workforce development, they have a levy decrease of $14,000 or a 1% decrease.
Any questions on workforce development and their decrease?
I have a comment there.
Supervisor Frederick.
I've been on the Tri-County Workforce Development Board for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And we used to meet, and now we don't meet, and I don't know if it's related, but we don't meet anymore. So how are they running it without having the board even meeting?
I thought that that group was meeting virtually when they were holding their board meetings.
Well, they are keeping it a secret because I haven't had a meeting in a year.
I will reach out to Mr. Bartz and find out what's going on.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe you didn't get the memo.
I don't know what the hell I didn't get, but I had no.
Here we go. It's getting saucy.
I mean, I'm not saying I missed the meeting, but, you know.
John.
So you talked about the contractors that you brought in as an MP.
Yes.
So how exactly do you work with Goodwill? Can you just give me a little insight just about it?
So we've been with Goodwill. We've contracted them, I don't know, 40-some years? I mean, a long, long time. So we have a long-standing relationship with them. And then some positions, we contract through them. You know, it's just a benefit for both of us because we're kind of giving back to the community. We're paying at cost. They're just making their, you know, whatever their wages are. But it helps with us, like me personally, I like contracting out because there's less paperwork to go through and, you know, that they're handling the reviews and all that. So as long as you get good employees, either way works.
And so what they're actually doing in general, those contractors, is like helping people find jobs.
They occupy a number of different positions in human services, of which includes some over at Brookside, but they'll do clerical functions. They run our mail for the county. We do our answering message center, which is our big phone bank to take in calls from the public. They staff our reception area, and then they have staff that runs the child care programs for us and also does some work through the child support agency that we have in our building.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Move to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Franco, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. Any further questions or comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, that passes unanimously.
All right, so the next division is our veteran services. Starts on page 183 in the budget book. They are looking for a levy decrease of $918 or 0.2%. Nothing new in this budget.
Chair, I'll move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Kubicki, seconded by Supervisor Frederick to approve. Any questions? They don't need anything? Did they ask for anything? No, I know.
I'm just asking if they asked for anything.
No.
Usually we cut things out in the beginning.
No, they didn't ask for anything.
Because I'd like to give them something if they ask for it, but okay.
Hold that thought.
They
did get some additional funding from the state during the biennial budget of $650.
Okay. So they're solid.
Okay. All right. John?
So you said a 9.8% decrease in the money they're drawing from the levy?
No.
So $918, 0.2%.
Okay, so yeah, it's, I was small, like...
basically nothing.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Any further questions? Seeing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, so our next division is the medical examiner. The first page just kind of shows a graph of their autopsies and manner of death. The next page, which I like, shows year over year their statistics. Mm-hmm. So for 2021, we budgeted 150 autopsies. So far through September, we have 88. If we were to straight line that, we're projecting 117. So that would be a 49,000 savings. Right now, our autopsies cost us 1,500 each. The next page.
Supervisor Kubicki.
Are we still contracting with Milwaukee County, correct?
Yes, yeah, so we are in contract with them till the end of 22. Yep. 23, we have to sign a new contract, and they wanted to increase their prices. Their costs have increased, but we're in contract with them until the end of 2022.
Any idea of what they want to go to?
I don't want to know.
Okay.
Because they are already asking us and not realizing we're already in a contract for them. So I am not sure, and I'm sure with COVID and everything and prices inflating, we might look at doing an analysis on what the cost would be to bring that in-house or vice versa.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So are you looking into what it would cost to bring it in-house?
We have. My predecessor, Lori, used to always do that every year, and I know, like, my first year or two we did, and the cost never made sense to bring it in-house. So depending on what they want to increase their cost to, we would take another look at that.
Okay. Supervisor Berg.
For those that might not know what we're contracting with Milwaukee County, what is it?
1,500.
No, what are we contracting? Like, services?
It's full service, so we get the autopsy, any blood work that's being done, and things along that line.
Anything else, Supervisor Berg? Thank you. Supervisor Wamball?
Question. So when it's done up in Milwaukee, do any of our people, our deputies, anybody go up there while this is being performed?
We transport the body and then bring it back.
So that would be a savings, too, if it was in-house, correct?
Potentially, but then you'd also have to hire a medical examiner to do the actual autopsy, which would probably end up costing you more in the long run than what we're doing right now with Milwaukee.
Thanks.
And if their costs are going up for supplies, ours would too. The same if it's they're not making.
I just knew there was that extra transportation part.
Supervisor Celebrate.
Thank you. Mike Gravely was talking to us a couple days ago about the increased use in meth and the assorted be it injuries or deaths, just like with heroin has been in the past couple of years and other prevalent drugs. Is that something that can be a cause of death or injury? Is that anything that can be determined on a local basis, or do you, if there is a resulting death, is that something that you always have to send up for an autopsy in order to make a determination?
Yes, overdose deaths we'd send for an autopsy.
Okay. And so you have done a cost-benefit analysis of going through and hiring a medical examiner?
We have in the past, and I believe at one point in time the county had a medical examiner that was costing approximately $225,000 a year to employ that person, and that was 2008-ish, and she moved on, and at that time we had Milwaukee stepped forward, and we were able to do that for $1,500 in autopsy, and we were able to save a lot of money doing that. So the last I heard what Milwaukee was looking at was a rate over like $1,650 in autopsy versus $1,500. So we're not talking like huge jumps now. Maybe they'll change their mind at the end of 22, but we'll see. We will take a look at that and determine what the best plan of action is. So there's not a lot of places you can go to do that if you go outside of Milwaukee. You're looking at Waukesha, which I'm not even sure if they say yes. Dane County is way too busy, and then you're up in it's been a while, I don't know if it was Fond du Lac or out of Gamey or someplace like that that also was doing autopsies, but it's it would add more expense going even further out than what we're on doing.
So then in order to make that determination, you'll have to do your own analysis, take out numbers, so to speak.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Sure.
So if you look at this, and if you're doing 100-120 autopsies a year, and if Milwaukee doubled their cost, $1,500 for 100, you're talking $150,000. If you're saying a medical examiner is in the $250,000 range, it doesn't take long to do the cost benefit. It doesn't make sense.
And we don't have the facilities for conducting autopsies.
Yeah, correct.
and that's expensive. We know.
Yeah, last time we had to use the place over at the hospital, and that cost us quite a bit in rent.
So you're projecting 117 for this year?
No, we were at 150 for this year. Oh yeah, we're projecting 117.
Were you trying to trick me?
I was going to go into the 2022 part.
Right. The 2022 part is 100.
We are 140 for 2022. So we brought it down from 150 to 140.
Okay.
Because if we look year over year, I mean, we were at 130, 116, 130. You know, we didn't bring it down a whole lot. We just brought it down 10.
Okay.
So the next page, page 18. The Office of the Medical Examiner starts on page 191, and you'll see that decrease of 15,000 for reducing our autopsies by 10. We do have an increase in the fees. That's in section 11 of almost 24,000. The fee schedule is on the next page, page 19. We are limited to how much we can increase the fees by state statute, so we can increase it every year by the CPI. So we did increase the fees, and that's where we get the 24,000 increase in revenue. So overall, for the medical examiner, they are looking for a decrease in levy of almost 16,000, or a 3.1% decrease.
Any questions from the committee? Other supervisors? Can I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Wambolt.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Juhas to approve the medical examiner portion. Any last questions before I call the vote? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
All right, so our next division is the Division of Health. Page 199. Like to congratulate on the AAA rating again before we start.
I knew this was going too smoothly.
Actually, this is fine. It's so they have an increase in FTEs of 3.85. They are all funded, so we have an increase in our KUSD contract that started in 2021, as well as you're aware of the SAMHSA grant. We received that, so that also starts in 2021. And then we had the Narcan grant that ended, so that was a reduction of 1.5. So the 3.85 is an increase, but it's all funded, grant funded or contract funded.
Wait a minute. I have a thought.
Yep.
Well, I have to get it. It's hanging around. So, now I got it. So when we had Dr. Freiheit here, or whoever was here at that time, Patty presented that grant. I didn't know that we already had the exact positions tied into that. Can somebody go into that? Because I don't think, I sat at Human Services, and I don't think they knew exactly how many people they were going to do at that point. So now with that grant, we know exactly what we're going to do with that.
So part of the grant application would have had those numbers in it. So the Human Service Committee meeting went south pretty quickly, and I think people just kind of lost focus on what...
It did go south quickly, and I was confused.
So those numbers were in that grant.
Okay.
So yeah, that's not something that... All of a sudden, now we figured out what to do. So we're just complying with what we told SAMHSA we would fund.
Well, sitting in that meeting and sitting here now, you can understand my disconnect.
No, I sat in that meeting also.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I saw you hopping around in your seat. So, okay. So you basically have, those are all the positions for this grant. You're set to go, you're rolling it out, and Human Services will be apprised of how that goes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, but sorry. Go on.
So overall, let's see, their personnel increases 301,000 due to those FTE changes and the Narcan grant ending. The next section in the revenue, you'll see on page 23, that our revenue increase is $337,000. In here, we do have the City of Kenosha contribution. So you'll see what we had in 2021 was $971,000, and it has reduced to $482,000. This is the reason we have that ARPA funding in there. The reason for this reduction is when we changed our service model from doing all the normal stuff that the health department does, they were focusing on testing and disease investigation, contact investigation. And what that did, that changed our percentage between the city and county percentage residents. So we went from a 66% city residents that we were serving to a 54% percentage. And that's what that equated to, was this $488,000 reduction. So the ARPA funds that are meant to help us with the COVID, that's what we're kind of filling in that gap with the ARPA funds from the countywide of the $33 million. The next page, if you go to the, not the next one, but the one after that. Yeah, right there. Oh, no, one before, sorry. So that shows our calculation. So as of, at 7/24, when they had given us their budget, what they projected, they had net cost the revenue less the expenses of $2.4 million. There you'll see the service city ratio of the 53.78%. So the city portion of that would be $1.3 million. Of that $1.3 million, we will be levying them already the $827,000. So we take that off of that $1.3 million, and the excess is what they get charged, the $482,000.
Which is why they're not getting tax double, because we're
correct.
Taking that off.
We're taking off the $827,000 for the tax we do collect on.
Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a one-time deal.
Yeah.
And the next year it's going to jump back up again?
So for 2021, now our focus has been vaccines. That will most likely change our percentage as well, based on the testing and who's all getting the vaccines and all that works. It will start to go back the other way once we get back into our normal services. When that will be, I don't know, when the pandemic starts to slow down and we start servicing more the stuff that we've been putting on the side to have all hands on deck handling the pandemic.
This has always been a hard one for me to understand, because I think in 2019 it was $1.3 million, and it went down to $1.1 million, and then it went down to $971,000. And now it's going to go down. It's going to go down again, but it's only temporary. Then it's going to go back up. And I always ask the question. I know there's Maximus, wherever they are, due to cost analysis, is what the city gets more than the towns do. I mean, I know you've heard this one before, because I brought it up, and I know that's coming from another source too. But I never could figure out what they get that the rest of the towns and villages don't. And then they tell me they get a more percentage, but I don't know what that percentage, what more that is, why that is. And no one could ever explain it to me.
We do, in our system, we track every resident that we serve by address, and then land information.
By zip code?
Nope, by address, street address.
And you changed it, because it used to be by zip code.
Yes, we now have the technology to do address, and we changed it about 3 years ago. So land information takes all those addresses and puts it in the mapping system, and then says what our percentages is by municipality.
So the city, are we saying the city gets $1 million more service than the towns or villages? And you've got documentation on that and things.
Yes, the city definitely utilizes more.
Could somebody just tell me what they get that no one else gets?
I wouldn't say it's not that they get it that no one else gets. It's just that they utilize the services more than probably the western side.
It's based on
they
usage.
They're paying the share that they're using.
So evidently the other towns and villages aren't getting they don't pay anything, obviously. They pay the county share of the overall bill.
Exactly.
But what the city gets is way beyond that because the city's more closer to all the services? Or
well,
what,
you know, when we combined, we took on more services that we normally didn't do, because we took on the city's health department, and they did more services than what the county would do. So we took on more services, and I also think location may have a part to play in it, as well as just the make of the city. So the job center is very close to city residents. It's not so close to Twin Lakes. So the city resident may just be more apt to go there and get a vaccine or get a flu shot or whatever they do there. Medical stuff.
So basically what you're saying is that the towns and villages don't even really get what they should get.
If they can, it's available for them. So
no, I understand that.
To utilize
people
it if they
have
want
to come in and get it. But everyone pays a share, and the city pays this $1 million or nine or whatever it decides, as Maximus decides that they're getting, and no one else is getting. So basically then what you're saying is that towns and villages aren't really getting what they should
be getting.
I think
they don't need it. I don't think they need it as much as the city. I think it's based on need. The city's coming because they need it, those services.
That could be true.
Yeah.
Hey,
what?
Okay. So it's based on usage,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And there's more city residents than there is county residents.
Well, obviously.
So it's based on who uses it. And these numbers, when the city had their own health department, they were paying about $1 million, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million to run their own health department. So, I mean, we have to keep that in mind. And if people still have further questions, this can be put on the finance agenda later, and we can have this whole discussion.
I just always said, what do they get that the rest of them don't? Obviously, the services they provide are the same for everybody, but they just don't have the access to them in the rural area, or what?
Everybody has the same access, but yeah. There's probably fewer people out there.
Because
I mean, if they wanted it, just because of population
of logistics
numbers.
Yeah. All right, I guess.
Patty?
The way I look at it, too, is sometimes Pleasant Prairie is brought up as the example of, well, why aren't they paying something? But if you look at a typical situation of getting vaccines for your child, city residents may need to be able to go to the health department to get those for their children. And the people in Pleasant Prairie, just by demographics, probably have their own doctor, probably have a pediatrician for their child. They don't need the services in that same manner that the city residents do. That's why the usage is different. Not just population, but the services that are being provided and what the level of need is.
Whatever.
We also
Supervisor Nordigan.
40 to 50 minute drive down here compared to, you know, you might have a doctor that you already use out there. Plus, I think out west we're a little more independent of things anyway, you know. It's just people don't think about coming down here, and I think Supervisor Lewis brought up a good point, is they probably don't even know all the services that are access to out there. I had no idea until I got on the board that they were out there. So maybe a little bit more advertisement. Push it out there, get it out there, get it into the schools, get it into the county, or I'm sorry, the town, village halls. You know, maybe have bring them out there to do the shots and all that, but information sessions out there that maybe could help out. There's a community, like Wilmot, I think, as well as Cleveland have these community, what do they call that? What is it?
Senior center?
No, well, you can do the senior center. That's about midway through. But just area places where they have different community things, like a workout center, or you're doing some sort of retirement planning. They have those types of things at the schools. Might not be a bad idea to try to, you know, put that information out there.
Reach.
And then be a higher percentage of the county coming out to use it less.
I just wanted to know, that's all. I mean,
And I didn't either. So. Okay.
Supervisor Franco.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, prior to this agreement, did city residents pay the full city portion and the percentage? Is that why there was a problem, and that's why this agreement was tendered? Or how did that work? I'm still not quite sure how that worked.
I do not know back then on if they paid both or if they got credit, because I have seen some documentation where if the city had their own, they would get a credit off the county portion for that. I don't know back then how that worked. I don't know. Do you know, Patty?
No. Well, so this agreement was entered in like 1992, 93, somewhere in there. So.
And that's when we had a city
health and the county had services that they were also providing. The statutes changed and allowed
cities and counties to merge if it made sense for the communities. This community decided that would make sense, and to this day it still does, to have one health department versus the city running something and the county running something.
Right.
So it was not only for the residents to be able to identify one site to go for full services, but also a benefit to the residents when it comes to what they're paying and potentially looking down the line. Supervisor Gantz pointed out that they're paying close to $1 million, if not over that, to run that in 92. Well, imagine what that cost would be now. So when the city says we're still paying $1 million, they got a good deal. I mean, quite honestly, so. I don't know what drove the decisions back then. I wasn't.
Well, how was it since then? I mean, you always hear this double taxation thing.
We're showing you that's not true. So the city is ultimately just paying for the services the residents receive. So on that slide, you see where that reduction down to 53% versus where it's been up to 66%. So when the tax portion doesn't cover all that expense, then yes, we're asking them to pay the rest for the services of what the city residents are getting. So it's not a double tax.
Okay, then one more question. Does Maximus do it for everybody, for all the towns and villages, or just the city?
If we do not do that detail level of accounting for all of them. If we were, they would have to be, their usage would have to be higher than their apportionment that is determined by the state. So like, if the city's got a bigger part of the pie, the other municipalities can't have their equal portion.
Well, they're not getting what they could get if they had the excess.
If we put them in that same formula that the city is, that calculates that 482, I think we would have a credit and not something old.
I'm assuming that too.
Yeah.
So the municipalities are actually subsidizing the city.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Tell that to
the mayor. I thought you were good at it.
Who bugs me every Monday.
You can tell him, Ron.
Supervisor Berg.
I think I've been in the same boat as Ronnie and the other source. We're keeping that name out apparently. But hearing what Patty had said made a lot of sense to me in the aspect of there's a different need here in the city. There's a need in other municipalities, but that need isn't utilized. Okay? That need is being utilized in the city, based on income levels and whatnot. Is that correct? So that makes sense to me as to we have a higher need based on our income level, and those folks don't go to doctors like I do, like my kids do. They go to the county health department. That makes a lot of sense to me, and I don't think I'll ever bring this subject up ever again.
Thank you for that.
All I want to do is understand it.
Yeah, we understand.
Makes two of us,
and I still don't.
Where are we after we got sidetracked?
Okay, so page 23.
My mind got sidetracked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The Health Division is looking for an overall levy increase of $90,000 or 6.5%. This was approved also by the Board of Health, besides Human Services Committee and Board.
What are we looking at? Health?
Sure. Supervisor Palmville.
Just a quick question just on the last subject. So for instance, if you're looking for a vaccination and you live in Salem, you can go to the Kenosha Community Health Center, you can go to your own doctor, you can go to Walgreens. So if you've got those places to get help out in the county, you don't have to come all the way to the job center to get assistance, because there are places where you can get assistance. But I can tell you, for our clientele that come into the sharing center, they know all about the health department. They know everything that they can access down there, and they see if they can access it someplace in the West, and if they can't, they always come down to the health department, to the job center, get those services. So it is very well known out in the county. People do know that it's out there for people who are maybe don't have the same resources with their doctor, don't have the same financial resources, and so people who do need to access services that might be less than their regular doctor, they're absolutely aware of the county health department and what's available down there. So we do a good job. You guys do a good job of getting the word out there, and we as nonprofits and churches, we know all about what you provide, so thank you for that.
Any other questions? I see there's a $200,000 increase in purchase services program.
That is most likely directly due to the SAMHSA grant.
Who are you looking towards?
I'm looking at Jaquetta. She's our fiscal manager for over there. Wait. Where are you looking?
I'm looking on 55 account number 571770.
What page?
Well, in my budget book, I'm on page 206. 206. Purchased service programs. It's a $200,000 increase.
I'm pretty sure it's related to the SAMHSA grant, but I can't give you a definite answer.
We're not doing pretty sures. We're going to find out.
I'm just going to look at the computer a little bit. Sorry.
That's no problem.
Yeah, it's really the banky. Triple A rating, yes. Congratulations on the triple A rating. Do you maybe
here.
Want to skip over to aging and then come back to it when she gets back with the answer?
No, we'll take 10 seconds and let it happen. We'll make the magic with the computer right now.
I missed that.
Keep the player.
206.
Thank you. I'm saying thanks, and I'll say it again.
Okay, let's listen up to what that is.
$66,000 of that is actually in our HUD grant. We anticipate these services rising within that.
So it'll be in the revenue portion, yes. $66,000, okay?
And then the rest is the SAMHSA grant, which also has revenue that offsets it.
Okay, so that $200,000 is offset by revenue.
Correct.
Thank you very much. Okay, anything else relating to health? Questions from the committee? Questions from any other supervisors? It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Supervisor Franco to approve. Any last opportunity for questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
All right, so our next division is the Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services. Page 25, so as I said in the beginning, they are projecting a surplus for this year. And page 25 shows our Behavioral Health Division. They are estimating a $3.4 million surplus.
$3.4 million surplus? It's good work.
Yeah, so...
there's
AAA, you know. When I
she's asking for a position.
Here it comes. Their placements have been down, so the graphs on page 26 kind of show their institute admissions in 2020 were 286. We're projecting 223, so those are projected to go down. Our hospital admissions for 2020 were 26. They're going down to a projection of 9. What also comes into play besides the admissions is the average length of stay. So the institutes, their admissions went down, but their stay went up slightly from 11.1 to 11.8. I mean, you can see in the 2019, they were up to 14.4. So as we reduce their length of stay, that reduces obviously our expense. Part of this, you know, we attribute to the pandemic and what's going on, and we don't know if it's going to come back up or not. So we're being conservative with what we are putting in the 2022 budget and not quite taking this $3 million into there because we are worried about it going back the other way. So we'll wait and see how that turns out. The other thing I want to point out on page 26 is our crisis contacts. So in 2017, we were at like 8,700, and that has been going up. It went up significantly in 2020. It has come back down, but it's still just going up. So now we're at 16,000. And the reason I want to point that out is because on the next page, we are looking to add 1.75 FTEs. So, you know, again, AAA rating, which gets us there, right? Helps us stay there. So, the 1.0 is the treatment coordinator that is funded. So, this is determined on if we get the funding. We have applied, we have not received word yet. So, if we get the funding, we will put that position in there. If we do not get the funding, we will not have that position in there.
Yeah, fair enough.
The other one is a 0.75 for our behavioral health outreach coordinator. This one we are putting in there to start April 1st, so it will be a 1.0 starting next year. And this is due to that previous page of our rising crisis contacts. So the division needs it to because they are seeing an increased number of opioid overdoses as well as mental health crisis needing assistance. They want to do some more outreach to the western side as well.
Well, it's important to note that in our behavioral health division right now, we have two county employees. So those folks have their hands full in getting the numbers that you saw on the previous page and trying to keep that under somewhat.
So we only have two people responsible for mental health in our county?
Correct. Well, from a county perspective.
Well, I mean, solely focusing on that.
Yes.
Wow.
And one of the things we've heard, and we heard just in a recent discussion with health, is what does the community know is available and how to access those resources. So this position would certainly be the point for that, would be involved in marketing, working with our partners in law enforcement, EMS, community agencies, provider outreach. They would be there to recommend the services and programs and really be that center point for the community to know who to go to get referred out for help that is needed. Everything you read nationally certainly points to the impact that COVID has had on people's behavioral health status, whether that's a mental health issue or a co-occurring even alcohol or drug issue. We're concerned as people spin out of that, what we're going to be doing with those folks. So adding another person into a very small unit that is really responsible, I think, for close to $14 million in this budget, I think is a benefit to not only the county, but to the people that are going to be looking to get help.
Go ahead, Supervisor Kubicki.
Who is the treatment coordinator now?
That position is currently vacant. The person left, got a law degree and moved on. So it's been vacant since like July or August. So Levi Stevens, who's one of the two in that unit, has been filling in to do that.
No.
Yes, Levi Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Thank you.
John.
Could you describe what that position does, the treatment coordinator?
It's responsible for attending all staffings, which are weekly, to assist in the referral process to get folks into the court. To ultimately, that position would also be the note taker, would do the assessments on people to make sure they meet the criteria, along with other individuals that are involved in the court, and help track those cases to make sure that the participant continues to make progress.
Any other questions on aging and disability from the committee, from the other supervisors? Seeing none.
That position that's missing.
Seeing someone. Supervisor Frederick.
So what is going to, are you trying to replace it, obviously, right now, right?
Which position?
The one you said there was that the person got a degree.
Oh, the treatment court? Yeah. So that is dependent on whether or not we receive the funding. So right now we have Levi Stevenson, who works for the county, filling in that role. We didn't want to replace that position until we find out from the state if we get the grant. So it's currently vacant in that sense, and we won't fill it if we don't get the grant.
But it's not vacant because you're covering it.
We are covering it with current staff.
And we have the money now. We just don't have it renewed for 2022.
Got to take care of the elderly, you know?
Yeah.
You're big, Ryan.
You're the protector. That's why Monica will jump behind you. Any other questions or comments? Can I have a motion?
So
it's been moved by Supervisor Celebrity, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki to approve aging and disability. All those in favor?
Time out.
John?
Sorry, so I wanted to make sure I have it quick. So Levi Stevenson is a county employee and is currently being spread thin.
Correct.
Okay, pick it back up. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, so our next division is Children and Family Services. As I kind of stated in the beginning, a lot of the levy increase is for this division. So the first graph is showing where we are projecting placements to be for 2021. So we are projecting a $1.2 million deficit in placements. The next graph explains where we're seeing this deficit. So the first section is what we budgeted, and then the next section is where we're actually landing. The last section is showing whether it's in the cost of care or whether it's in the how many children are placed in there. So we're seeing the majority, the cost variance is $1.6 million. So we are $1.6 million deficit based off of the increased cost of care. And then we're seeing a surplus in the days of care. So how many children are in there every day? We actually have a savings of $890,000. This is through August. So when the state approved their biennial budget, the corrections rate went from $615 a day to $1,154 a day. That cost alone will cost us, based on where we have been, $1.2 million additional cost and placements. They did add some funding to go along with that, which equates to about $178,000 for us. So right, that alone has increased us at least $1 million. Now, the rates we pay are, majority of them are state set, so the state sets the rates, and obviously the court system sets that the children where they go. So this is kind of just where we're at. Some of the judges are putting, we had some issues with car thefts, and they've been putting those kids in corrections, and that is at that higher rate. The next page, page 32, starts our 2022 budget for them. That starts on page 217 in the budget book. So again, I just need to say congratulations on the AAA rating before we go into FTEs. So DCFS is looking for an FTE increase of 2 full-time social workers. One would get hired in quarter 2 and one in quarter 4, which is why it's a 1.0 on here. Right now, their APS workload, they're projected for 2021 to have 823 cases. This equates to 91.4 cases per social worker. 2019, we were at 725, so that's an increase of 100 between 2019 and 2021. Wisconsin Human Services Association, they have a standard of 72 cases per worker. So if we were to get these 2 additional positions, that would bring the caseload to 75, so we'd still be slightly over the 72. If we were to only get one, we'd be at 91.4 per worker, we'd be at 82.3, and then if we get the 2, we'd be at 75 cases per worker.
So just a brief correction. She said APS and CPS, and that's Child Protective Services.
Oh.
So these are the workers that are going, when we get a call where someone is alleging the child is abused or neglected, these are the folks that are going out to do that investigation. So right now we have them stretched beyond where they need to be, and there's a bunch of time frames that they have to meet in order to be in state compliance, and certainly the safety of the child is paramount to us. So we are kind of in a situation now where, because the numbers have gone up so much, we are desperately in need of adding 2 additional protective service workers to that unit.
So the next page, section 7, you'll see an increase for crisis services. It's in the child welfare, the first line there, $141,000. That's for crisis services with kids, and then also a 2% contractor increase. And then you'll see our out-of-home placements, an increase of the $1.7 million. That's for our increase in placements. So overall, they are looking for a levy increase of $1.5 million, or 18.1%.
That's what the 2 positions are, right?
Yeah, so we, in our budget in the beginning, we did a 2% contractor increase for all of our contracted.
Supervisor, I didn't hear what was said. One's talking over the other, so could you clarify?
What was the question from Supervisor Frederick?
Well, the budget, you said your budget was up, and that what you're raising is, that includes those 2 positions, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Supervisor Salaberry.
Thank you, Chairman. A couple nights ago, Judge Rossell was in here talking about higher costs for be it emergency detentions or using Racine in Washington County for early detentions prior to somebody being found a delinquent. You're talking about, he also mentioned though that with the help of ACE and some other programs, the actual number of days spent per child are declining, and that the state as a result is charging less to the county for days overall spent per year up at a juvenile institution. Is that reflected then here, or are you talking about the county actually having to foot a higher bill for juveniles, minors, who are spending a longer time up at the institution?
Yeah, the state has never reduced our rate based on utilization of their services. So yes, we are paying a higher rate when a kid goes up to corrections.
Maybe the rate, but what about the number of days that the county overall has to pay for a child staying at the institution?
Well, that varies based on that kid's level of needs and the determination made by that institution. So if you're talking corrections, there's a whole process that a child has to go through before they're considered to be eligible for release, and then ultimately it depends on what a judge thinks down here on that. So on average, it's probably anywhere from 7 to 9 months a kid is spending in a correctional facility.
So overall, per annum, are you finding that the county is having to pay a higher amount? You talked about a spike, as you mentioned, in AVWAD, operating a vehicle without owner's consent, and juveniles coming in from Illinois. But that was said to be an anomaly, and that overall, the number of days that a child is spending in a state institution has declined, and therefore the amount of money paid by the county has declined. Is that accurate, or is that something that...
I believe the days only decline if you kid is sent to the ACE program, which is run and receive, because that is a time-limited program. So it's like a 120-day program where kids are housed in their detention facility and go through a bunch of treatment. So that does help the budget. It's at a much lower reduced rate than corrections itself. The kids that, yeah, you're referring to that did the OMVOX, operating mobile vehicle without owner's consent, majority of them are up at corrections and probably going to be there for 7 to 9 months, if not longer, depending on their behavior and other factors. And that certainly will add to the days of care in the correctional institutions.
So are you finding that the county's paying an overall lesser gross amount to the state for that, or are you finding that it's going up?
We're definitely going up. I mean, I remember what Ron said last week. I think we have 13 right now in corrections, and he says it hasn't been that high since, I want to say, did he say 08?
Yeah, it's been.
I mean, we don't know. We budgeted for like 6, and right now we have 13 in there. So it's the volume in there is double. As for how long they're staying in there, I know we were hoping one person would get out this November, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So I can't say specifically for the length of stay without talking to Ron first and looking at that, but we definitely are not paying less in correction costs. It's definitely a lot more.
And are you finding on a temporary basis while the case is pending that you're paying a higher overall gross amount of prior to the determination of, for lack of a better term, the adjudication?
So you're talking about kids that are just put in detention?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, that
I trial, so to speak.
Yeah, I believe that's in Mary Byers' budget, juvenile intake.
Right.
And I believe she was coming at the committee asking for more money in that, because it's been more kids are spending longer periods of time in detention because of court-related issues.
Okay. So we're facing an increase on both of those bases. Is that accurate?
It's my understanding, yes.
Thank you.
Sure.
Anything else for that in your presentation?
Oh, no, that was it for DCFS. Okay.
Any questions from the committee? Any supervisors?
Move to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Juhas.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Frederick. Any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, so what better to go along with AAA rating than a number one rated nursing home?
So we're here, so if you guys are, you know, at Woodman's or whatever, and we are number one, so in the States.
Wisconsin.
In the States. Last year we were number 3, the year before we were number 5. So quite an accomplishment considering a pandemic.
You do realize it's hard to repeat, so.
It's hard to read what?
it's hard to repeat as champion, so you have to.
I'm not going to deny the fact that I'm like on board. There's not too many places to go from there, so here we are.
We're going to enjoy it while we can.
Wisconsin Riverside Care Center.
Would you mind passing that?
Gladly, yeah.
All right, so as I said in the beginning, right now we are looking at a $2.1 million loss for Brookside. Mainly due in the census. So our census is still down. So we had budgeted at 145 for daily census. And through August, we're at 110.5. So that is making up most of our revenue loss right now, as well as obviously additional expenses and salaries needed for work through the pandemic. Brookside Care Center starts in the budget book on page 225. They are looking for a 0.9 reduction in FTE changes. 0.6 reduction is for vacancies in the dietary services. So we contract that with Unidyne. So as an employee leaves the county, it does get contracted through Unidyne. We are reducing a MDS coordinator, 0.5. A unit secretary reduction of 0.4, and then we are adding 3 environmental service positions are increasing from a 0.8 FTE to a 1.0 FTE. So that's a total of an increase of 0.6 FTE. The next section goes over our personnel changes in the dollar amounts. In this budget, we are looking to defund the CNA's 12.2, so that's $565,000. And when we get to the revenue, you'll see the reason we are doing that is because we are reducing our census that we are budgeting. Obviously, we're not at where we're budgeting. We don't know how long the pandemic will last, but we reduced the census greatly, so we don't want to staff for a full census when we're not going to be that high. If our census does go up, let's say the pandemic ends and we get back up to where we normally are in the 150s, we can add FTEs at that time. The next page, section 4 is our contractual changes. We have an increase of $149,000 in this section. The majority of that is in our dietary. So again, they take on our vacancies, so we have 0.6 that we're moving into there, as well as you know, food and labor costs are increasing. So that's just the cost to continue to increase that. The other sections in here are based on where our actuals are running according to census. So for anybody that stays on a medical stay, Med A, they're coming temporarily, we have to pay for all of their medical expenses. And those costs are above and beyond a long-term resident. So we back into those costs as to where we actually are based on our census days, and that's what we multiply into there based on what we are projecting for census. The next section is our supplies. So you'll see an increase of $304,000. The majority of this, we put in $250,000 for COVID supplies. So in the beginning, I said we have some ARPA funds in here. That's that $250,000. So you'll see that offset in the revenue section for the countywide ARPA funding. So overall, the expenses are increasing $781,000. Of that, $250,000 is the ARPA funding and COVID expenses. But then we also have in here $423,000 increase for bonding. The next page shows our capital outlay. The first column with the amounts is the capital outlay that will be funded by our operating revenues. The second column is the bonding section. We have a couple of ovens, kitchen ovens, that we will be replacing. One is over 15 years old, the other one is anywhere between 10 and 15 years old. $25,000 in there is for residential facility furniture equipment. We just replace those items on a rotational basis, so we have $25,000 in there every year for that. But then we've also got in here a generator replacement for $25,000, and then the roof replacement on the old part of the building for $480,000. The next page is our revenue and what we are projecting for revenue. So, as I said, we reduced what we are going to budget for 2022. So we were, for 2021, we budgeted 145 beds per day. For 2022, we are budgeting 134 beds per day. So that's a reduction of 11 beds per day, which equates to about $465,000 reduction in revenue. We do have a rate increase in here for our private pay. We're increasing that $10 from $355 to $365. And then we also have increased in the Medicaid rate. So with the state budget, they have approved some increases in Medicaid reimbursement. We don't know exactly how that will equate. We did add 12% in there based off of Leading Age, an expert we have at Leading Age. That was his estimate as to what we would see for our increase. The next section is the revenue changes. So we are looking at a total revenue increase of $481,000. Again, $250,000 of that is the ARPA funding. And then we have $423,000 increase for the bonding funding. And then you'll see in here the levy giveback has been removed for 2022. So 2021, we had a $300,000 levy giveback. We were supposed to reduce it to 200, then 100. Of course, that was before the pandemic. So we're having a hard time getting back up our census. So that's to help relieve some of our pressure from the census. That's it for Brookside. Questions?
Supervisor Becky.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying is the bed count is down because of the COVID situation, correct? And then projections for next year, you're lowering the amount of beds down by 10?
Lowering it by 10, not quite as far as where we are running right now. We're hoping, we're starting to see it coming back up, but, you know, Linda can talk more into the operations. When we have an outbreak, which is one person that has COVID, they have to shut things down. They have to shut wings down. They have to shut admissions down where they can't bring in residents. So,
and then, in turn, we have to have less employees because we don't need them to. Now, those people are...
It's kind of a double-edged because we need more for COVID, so we need more for testing and for cleaning and for that, but we need less for care for the residents because, yeah, we have less residents.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Frederick.
Are you doing that reduction in staff through attrition, or are you laying people off, or what is it? What is your...
We are not. They were already vacant.
Right.
Okay.
So they were already vacant.
So,
we just
no one's gonna, no one's going to get laid off.
No, no one's getting laid off.
Supervisor Gashke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda or Tammy, could you just clarify a little bit more for us how COVID is affecting your census numbers? Is it because you can't safely accommodate the same amount of residents because you have like two bedrooms or something, or is it because demand is down? You don't have as many people interested.
Well, we have all single rooms throughout the building, so that's always, that definitely worked in our favor, but it is directly affected to COVID and the regulations that we have to adhere to. So you can see the trend of our census the second the pandemic hit, and it started to go down. People weren't wanting to go to nursing homes. It's really hard to get back up to where, when you have an outbreak. One outbreak could be considered a staff member who was not even, that could have been a dietary person. But until that contact tracing and testing is being done, you have shut down all admissions. Things have started to change a little bit more now that the vaccine has come out and regulations lifted a little bit. But it's just harder to get back up to it. I mean, we went through a time where doctors were not wanting their patients to go to nursing homes, and you know, we got a bad rap there for a while. But it's to the point where people have to continue the care, and so we are starting to tick back up. It's just going to take a minute to get there.
So it's really both that you can't safely accommodate given the regulations, more residents, and demand itself is down because people are opting to be cared for at home or whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Patty, you had something to say.
I just wanted to point out that they're defunding these positions, and the census is done, that's how they're budgeting. But as census goes up, there's budget resolution language that allows them to refund those positions and hire those positions without coming back to the board to do it. Just so that you know that there is that balance there, and it will depend on this. There has to be revenue to support the position, and that will allow them to.
That's good, because we're number one and we want to stay number one.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Byrd.
Piggybacking off of what Supervisor Gashkin asked, how have elective services or elective surgery also affected you?
Well, initially that was obviously halted for quite some time, and even with the Delta variant, they went back to that as well, because we knew that hospitals were not even able to treat just regular people, and they were of the elective surgeries. They were only doing the COVID patients because they were at max capacity, and that was only a few months ago. They have now started to slowly trend back into that. But again, you can see how the community cases, if they rise, our census decreases. It's a direct correlation, and we've been able to track it. So now that it seems when things are starting to go back down within the community, our census is climbing back up.
I'm looking at our Medicare numbers, and they're just, we were the lowest in August than we were since the beginning of the year. How do we get Medicare patients, and why is that down so much?
Medicare is your short-term rehab, so those are the elective surgeries.
So people need to have more surgeries, is that what we're saying?
Pretty much. or you know, it sounds horrible sometimes, but like, you know, maybe they have a fractured tibia fibia and they need to come in and you know, have short-term rehab, and they're there for, you know, 17 days, and that is where our largest revenue is related to the Medicare, and it's your short-term rehab.
Yeah, because the other ones are not.
Nope.
They're all trending down this last month. But not by much, but right. The Medicare's.
So August, actually, because last time I spoke, I think it was the beginning of July here, right? We had an outbreak of 3 fully vaccinated residents who tested positive at the end of that month. It just, because you have to halt all admissions, it was not a good situation. So that obviously went into the August numbers.
Okay. Supervisor, you have.
Linda, how often do you test?
So, our residents, we are fully vaccinated 100%. Right now, regulatory wise, because we have not had an outbreak of a positive staff member or resident in months, lots of knocking, we are now having to test only unvaccinated staff 2 times weekly, which we have. You don't test anybody who has tested positive for COVID the last 90 days, so it's approximately 30 to 35 that we're testing twice a week.
Okay. And all your patients, are they tested?
No, because they're fully vaccinated.
So they have to be fully vaccinated to go to worksite?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that is not because we don't want to take them. The problem is, regulatory-wise, you have to have a whole different unit and staff member designated for unvaccinated residents, of which we don't have.
Right. Yeah.
That's our biggest problem. Okay. And I hate that, but there's no option. We can't treat them because we don't have the area or the residents specifically designated for them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Salaberry.
Thank you. With regard to receiving any federal money, are you under the mandate then that would require all of your employees to be vaccinated by a date certain?
Yeah, so that has not rolled out yet. We're still waiting for the executive order from the president. I've not heard. So the last thing that was stated was all healthcare workers, in addition to the businesses that have 100 employees or more. Every day I feel like I keep hearing, oh, it's coming, we're going to get it more information. Last I heard, it was supposed to be the middle to late October. Today's the 27th. I have nobody, I was on a call the other day with the state of Wisconsin, and they said they were just on a call with CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, who is our regulators. They don't, they said that. It's in the works, that's all we keep hearing.
And are you prepared to work with any employees who may not meet that standard once it's implemented?
Yes, correct. So there, fortunately, we're now 80% fully compliant with our staff, which is unbelievable compared to the surrounding areas. And there are a few that have said they might retire. Other than that, they're just kind of like, well, I'll just wait until I have to, kind of thing.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Frederick.
So what you're saying is that some staff won't get vaccinated. And if they get the COVID and they're out, we still have to give them ANS because they didn't take the COVID, right?
So that's dependent on their exempt versus non-exempt status. So there is the waiting period for those that are non-exempt of 3 days. And then that would, yes, then the COVID pay could
so they
kick
refuse
in that
to the reason is that they get protection to protect themselves, and we have to pay them ANS because they get it.
Well, remember,
I get it. It's just mind-boggling, that's all.
Preaching the choir.
And then they have to shut down the nursing home, and they can't have any admissions, and that revenue mm-hmm. goes down. So then they have to shut the nursing home down, and then the revenue goes down.
Yeah.
I know. I've often said that if they test positive and they were unvaccinated, they can write the email to the family members and letting them know why
we are not
allowing visitation.
Any other questions or comments on Brookside? John?
So, help me out here a little bit, because like we have a census of 110 right now, and we're trying to budget for 134. That's, so like, do you believe that by the start of the year that we can actually get to 134?
Start of the year? I don't know. I can't predict that. I mean, literally everything changes so much in healthcare, specifically during this pandemic. Often, things were changing 24 hours. It was crazy, crazy, crazy. I would like, and we will do everything we can to get to that number. There are many things in the outside areas that they are not able to care appropriately for residents, that we are now getting a mass influx of referrals from surrounding areas. But we just have to do everything that we can to ensure that we can meet every resident's needs that does want to come to Brookside.
So, knocking on wood, what kind of time frame do you think, with just giving a rough estimate, that census would have reached?
I could not tell you.
Not even close.
And I say that because if everything was going to trend as it is today, we could maybe do it. However, again, we get one outbreak, then we're not going to be able to admit for, you know, 10 days. And then that shuts everything down, and we've got multiple discharges because we have short-term rehab, and then trying to build that back up is going to take time.
So I guess, like, my question then is it a better choice to bring down the census some but still be optimistic about the number that is we're actually going to be taking in? And if so, why? Versus trying to put it lower and then maybe building up and being more conservative about it.
It's a legitimate question. It just has to be trust in the staff.
Right. So that's also staffing to census levels as well. So much of our budget is staff. It's also fixed expenses, so we can't change anything but fixed expense. However, if we have a lower census, then we wouldn't need as many nurses and CNAs, right? So that our salaries are going to decrease, so our expenditures will be less.
Thank you. Supervisor Uhouse.
Just real quick, Linda. Okay, if I'm at Brookside and I'm ready to be discharged and there's an outbreak, can I still be discharged, or do I have to stay there for 10 days?
Nope. Oh, God, no.
No, we can. You can get out. Okay. All right.
You're correct. We're not keeping you. No.
Okay.
We would send you home, recommend that you get tested if there was any potential exposures, because we do the contact tracing, mm-hmm. all that stuff. But, yeah, in fact, we've had it where we will contact the health department to say, hey, listen, this person could have been a direct exposure, although we do masking and everything else, it would be hard. And say, hey, listen, you might want to follow up and potentially do testing in their home if they can't leave.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Any other questions? Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Salaberry to approve the Brookside portion. Any further questions at this time? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, so our next division is Willowbrook Assisted Living. Page 45 is their financials through August 31st. They do have a profit of $90,000. They're actually above where we were budgeting. They have increased revenue of $13,000, and they have a decrease of expenses, $29,000. So you look at the next page, that goes through the census, and again, this directly relates to census. So we had budgeted a daily occupancy of 23 beds per day. Their year-to-date average is 22.6, so pretty close to budget. The next page starts their 2022 budget, which starts in the budget book. It starts on page 237. They are looking for an increase of a 0.4 resident engagement. So they currently have a 0.6, and they want to increase that to a full-time position. That would equate to about $23,000, $24,000 in the section below. So their personnel increase is $134,000. We had a couple of reclasses, the NEAs to NEBs, and certified nursing assistants, NEC to NEDs. Health insurance was increased, so that was $53,000. The next section, contractual changes, has an increase of $25,000. They just underwent a new electronic health record system, so we have increased costs for that. And our supply changes went down $1,930. Cost allocation is an increase of $19,000. This is a cost allocation from the Brookside to them for our fiscal contracted services. And then our operating revenue, we are budgeting at 23 beds again, and at a rate of $193.15 per day. There is different levels as to what they would pay if it's a monthly. And then we're gonna put in a 3% rate increase into that. So that equates to almost a $64,000 increase.
Any questions from the committee?
How many residents are
Supervisor
there?
Frederick.
How many are there right now?
Yeah, right.
24. We just admitted our 24th resident today who will be there for respite.
And how's Nick Carrasco doing?
Well, he's over at Brookside.
Huh?
He's on the other side.
Brookside. And he is amazing.
George Mazzarelli is still there?
I grew up with
both of them.
All people we don't
want
great
hip violations.
I'm sorry.
Everybody's doing great.
Everybody's lovely. All over the world.
You have to answer.
There you
can't
go.
Say, okay. Sorry about
you,
that.
No. Any further questions? Can I have a motion on Willowbrook? Bob, you want to speak?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd just like to mention that this is Adela here is doing a great job managing the terrible situation that we're facing every day. It's very, very difficult to manage a facility like this with so many problems that we're facing. I just want everybody to understand she has a heck of a job monitoring and the responsibility that she has. And I want to give her a lot of credit. I want to share that with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm.
Sorry if I broke any protocol.
No. So can I have a motion to pass Willowbrook, please?
Absolutely, I make that motion.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Somebody want to make
congratulations.
A
motion to adjourn.
Good job.
Moved by Supervisor Juha, seconded by Supervisor Kubicki to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Anybody want to stay?
No.
Anybody else have anybody in?
You got home?